You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's an exploration of legislative agendas, specifically what people in the Cape Fear region hope their legislators will do in Raleigh. The General Assembly convenes for the long session next week. Joining me now, Representative Holly Grange, Republican from House District 20. Representative Grange, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. And Senator Harper Peterson, Democrat in District 9, who is heading to Raleigh as a legislator for the first time. Senator Peterson, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to ask your own question on this Wednesday, you can do that by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. According to the City of Wilmington's legislative agenda, bridging the urban and rural divide without sales tax redistribution is at the top. This, we hear, is likely to come up again, and your constituents, this region, would stand to lose, not gain, if sales tax revenue is adjusted to give more to rural counties. What's your case against it, Representative Grange?
Well, we are a growing area, and to me, it's not fair that we would have to forfeit some of our sales tax revenue in a region where we have tourism issues, we have beach renourishment issues, we have environmental issues, and the sales tax money, we need that. And my constituents have been very vocal that they do not support any sort of sales tax redistribution.
How do you make the case to the other legislators, especially legislators from rural districts?
I think they understand it, that we're not going to support it, those of us who are in more urban areas, because of our population and the needs of our population, and are in some situations greater than the needs of their population. We've got more people. We have more issues that need to be addressed, you know, whether it be crime statistics, the opioid problem here in Wilmington. We need to be able to utilize our resources to combat these problems.
Senator Harper Peterson, this is the first time I've been able to say this to you face-to-face on the air. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Was this a surprise? And what's on your agenda as you head to, I mean, this is, you know, we're no longer in the campaign season. What's first for you?
It's a pleasant surprise. And the reason I ran was to win and to campaign aggressively and represent our community in Raleigh. So now the work begins, and it's work. I was listening to Ted Davis's comments. You stay busy. It's already busy. I feel like I'm a freshman in college learning from some experts across the board, not only other legislators on both sides of the aisle, but school of government, Chapel Hill, our legislative services, there's a lot, so I've got to really wake up my brain. It's been a while.
What has surprised you the most about the process after the election?
This is a busy state. We have lots of challenges. We have a lot of people that are on the challenges. A lot of solutions or suggested solutions. But I think at the end of the day, you have to work with other legislators, whether it's urban, rural, suburban, and find solutions for the state as a whole, as well as addressing solutions for your immediate district, your representation. So I'm anxious to work with Holly, to be perfectly honest. We're not going to agree on a lot. We'll find out as we move forward. But I think it's important. If I'm representing my constituents, and obviously some of my constituents are in Holly's district, House 20, then we need to be talking about. We need to find common ground on important issues and try to, you know, come to some solutions that satisfy our constituents. That's at the heart of it. My next step up the ladder will be on the Senate Minority Caucus, Democratic Caucus, and working with the governor. But again, I'll always come back to, and you will remind me, you, the public, that I represent you first.
And along those lines, if you heard the first part of this discussion with Representatives Butler and Davis, you heard listeners saying, is there any movement along a process for a nonpartisan redrawing of districts? Can we get away from gerrymandering? Please, please, please put the public good first. Think about the people. You know, there was this theme of wanting to get back to what it means to be a public servant and kind of getting away from the partisan political agendas. Representative Grange, are you hearing that from constituents?
I do hear that from constituents, but I also agree with what Representative Davis said, is that the party that is in, that is not in charge is always going to be the one that complains about the districts and how that those districts are drawn, and it's vice versa maybe the next time around if the other party is in charge. And I also think it's very difficult to say that anything can be nonpartisan in this day and age. I think that there's always going to be some sort of bias that someone has, and that would be displayed, maybe not even intentionally. But there, I don't think nonpartisan can work. I don't think it exists.
You, Senator Peterson, you also mentioned the busyness of all of this. How much is really involved? And Representative Davis, of course, has talked about that at length. Do you think that there will ever be a movement towards a full-time legislature? Right now, this is a part-time gig, in name anyway. But
no. In fact, I believe in term limits, and it shouldn't be. Fortunately, I'm available to dedicate the time. My wife is handling the business now, and she's happy to see me out of the house and on the highway going to Raleigh. But I think, you know, it's a volunteer service. You're serving your community. It's not a profession. We're not paid as a profession, so I think that's important. But I think term limits, I believe in that as it was originally designed.
You're listening to Coastline. The North Carolina General Assembly convenes next week, and today we're hearing from local legislators about their agendas for the coming session. With us right now, Senator Harper Peterson, Democrat in District 9, and Representative Holly Grange, Republican of District 20. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Penny writes, I realize lawmakers figured out HB2 was harmful enough to our state to water it down and sunset it. However, it still exists. And companies such as the film industry know it still exists. And she writes, it is still a detriment to our state. She says, I know Deb and Harper are opposed to it and would like to hear, she sent this in the last segment, Ted Davis joined them in vowing to rid us of this as immediately as possible. Please try to move our state forward, she says. But Representative Grange, what would you say to Penny on this front?
I think Penny is right. It's something that, you know, the sunset is coming up. We need to address this. HB2 was a solution in search of a problem. Many people have said that, and it has hurt our area. And the film industry is very important to Wilmington. My constituents have voiced that to me, and we do need to take care of this hanging over us.
And, of course, bringing back film to North Carolina, Kay wrote in and said, what's being done? That's certainly part of the city of Wilmington's legislative agenda. Senator Peterson, What's the strategy there?
I think the strategy is with a stroke of a pen, we could move up to sunset and bring the industry back, not only movies, but TV. It's changed in the last 5 years since we had no incentive, and then we introduced the grant program, which I think is a poor substitute, but again, that's for another discussion. But the fact is that we're losing an incredible amount of opportunity for jobs, and obviously tax dollars. I think we were at $270 million in revenues in 2012-13. Last year, over $60 billion in Georgia alone, Atlanta principally, associated with entertainment, whether it's movies, TV, music, feature film. It's a new industry. It's changed, and we're losing weekly, it seems. Production companies looking at our area, but 142 gets in the way, and they want a clear message from the legislature. They've had it from the governor that we want to welcome film back with open arms. We created it 35 years ago. We own it, and we deserve to have it. And it's great for working men and women. And we have just turned upside down so many families that no longer have the luxury of having a job, being part of a community, a productive part of this community. So I'm 100% behind it. Obviously, we're in the minority, but hopefully we'll move this along quickly.
So you're talking about readjusting the structure of the incentive from a grant fund to the old tax rebate?
It's limiting. And why? I mean, if the grant program is an incentive, but why limit it? Why be so narrow if we are welcoming film back? Let's open it up and reinvent or update, reimagine what the incentive can be. And help educate everybody. I think it's an educational process. So let's not hesitate because, again, we are losing production company after production company. You read about it in the papers. Thank goodness we have the Swamp Thing here, you know, just holding the line. But the sooner the better. And again, I understand now that Savannah has taken the lead ahead of LA. And that's amazing. We were Hollywood East, not 5 years ago.
Representative Grange, is the minority, will they gain any traction in a push for changing the structure of the film incentive?
It will be difficult. I have a lot of colleagues on my side of the aisle that do not understand the importance of the film industry to North Carolina and even to this region. And they are the ones that we have to win over in order to change the program. I've had colleagues brag to me about movies that have been filmed in their district, but then look at me and say, but I'm not going to vote for your film incentive in the next breath. So there is an education process that needs to go on.
And are you talking about, I mean, certainly you've expressed the fact that you're a supporter of the film industry and you want to bring more of it here, but are you talking about fattening what goes into the grant, or are you talking about possibly entertaining the idea?
I would entertain the idea of trying to restructure the system, but it has to be something that we can pass, and it has to get through the House. And actually, a lot of times, it's harder to get things through the Senate than the North Carolina House of Representatives. So we have to be able to do that. I think that the governor would certainly sign anything that, you know, would have to do with that. But I think it's going to be a long process. We did what we could last biennium by getting rid of the sunset of the program and making it recurring money so that there was a little more predictability, and then tweaking it to allow different types of projects. But there's a lot of work to be done, and it has to be something that we can get through our chambers.
Jeff writes, why is the difficulty of getting a perfect nonpartisan redistricting commission an acceptable excuse for not trying to get a good nonpartisan redistricting commission?
I'm not saying that we're not trying to get a good nonpartisan redistricting commission.
It's interesting. You did say that you implied that you think most people think in partisan ways.
They do.
That they're either red or blue.
And you know how I know that? This last election cycle, I saw it every day out on the campaign trail. And I'm not saying that redistricting should be fair, but I'm telling you, if the Democrats were in charge now, I assure you that the Republicans would be complaining about the current districts, because we have in the past.
That's true. Both parties have been guilty of gerrymandering. There, no question about it, which is why some states have moved to a nonpartisan process where they've set up independent panels, and there are a few different models for that. We've had academics and courts say North Carolina is a gerrymandered state.
I'm not sure that we're not going to look at those types of nonpartisan panels and employing those in our redistricting efforts. I'm not saying we're not going to do that. I'm just saying it's very difficult to say that anything is nonpartisan at this day and age.
Is there any value in trying to find common ground, and I'm reluctant to use the buzzwords of, you know, civil discourse and all of that, because I think it, the more it gets used, the less meaning it carries, the less thoughtful people are about what that really means. But we keep hearing from listeners, we're hoping for something, a little more meaningful negotiating process, or an outcome that really does engage all different kinds of affiliations. And it seems like our listeners, anyway, are just getting kind of tired of that hard divide.
It's frustrating, and I think we should strive to negotiate and work together because it's for the common good. I like to think of us as a delegation down from this part of the state, and we have unique issues that we need to deal with as a delegation. And those, to me, there are a lot of those that are nonpartisan, things that we can cross. We can agree to disagree on certain things, but generally we want to do what's right for our community.
Andy writes, while the Chemours debacle has generated greater awareness about public trust in water quality, will the legislature expand its water concerns to include, for example, the discharged pollutants from the dozen-plus municipal wastewater treatment plants located upstream from where Wilmington draws its drinking water? Senator Peterson.
Yeah, I think everything is in play here. Point source pollution or discharge into our public waters, and in this case, our source for drinking water. I think we have to look at everything. It's a new day. Everybody I speak with in the community wants to know what's in the water. Is it safe to drink? Who puts these contaminants in the water? Are they going to be responsible and pay for the damages? Are they going to share with us all the information they have? Are they going to identify the chemicals they're discharging, whether it's in the air, water, or soil? They need to be responsible, and we shouldn't be paying for their mess and their mistakes. So I think that's my starting point. That's the community's starting point. And obviously, the consent agenda that's being brought forward by DEQ and Riverwatch and Southern Environmental Law Center is a hot topic right now. I want to know what the next steps are. If this is the first good step, I want to know what's next, and I do want to know how we're protected and how our problems, our concerns, our issues, our challenges are addressed here in the Wilmington, southeastern North Carolina.
So you're supporting that consent order as it's written?
Well, here's my position right now, okay? It's still out there. It's a draft. The public comment period is just concluded. Speaking with Secretary Reagan yesterday, they're going to bring all of the information back, bundle it up by topic, and present it to the public and amend this consent order. That was a draft. I'm surprised that the county and the city have already voted on supporting or opposing it. It's not complete yet. So let's see what the completed project is, then have a discussion and then come out for or against. But at the end of the day, it has to be additional steps taken. And there's individual lawsuits that I respect, whether it's Brunswick County or Cape Fear Public Utility or class action suits. All of these are welcome, and we need to preserve that emphasis. We don't want to diminish the impact that they'll have.
Representative Graves.
Well, and, you know, I look at it also from a statewide perspective. We're very focused on the Cape Fear River for obvious reasons down here, but there are issues all over the state. So we need to have processes in place so that everybody in North Carolina knows what's in their water and knows that their water is safe to drink.
We keep hearing the Hardison Amendment gets in the way of the state really creating some sort of regulatory framework that allows the agencies who are in charge to actually control drinking water quality. Is the Hardison Amendment an obstacle, and should that be done away with?
The Hardison Amendment will not apply in situations of public health and safety. As lawmakers, we are always obligated to act if public health and safety is at risk. The Hardison Amendment does not preclude us from taking care of those issues.
And so in this case, while EPA has been slow to establish a regulatory framework for compounds like Gen X, is it time for DEQ to set stricter standards?
DEQ can set stricter standards if it's in the interest of public health and safety. Now, the EPA is not, obviously, because the government is shut, federal government is shut down, they're not testing the water. But the law that the law that we passed last short session does provide that the collaboratory will take over that role in the event that the EPA cannot get results back to us in a timely manner.
As Ms. Grange mentioned, we need to know throughout the state what's in the water, if I'm hearing her correctly. We need to take an aggressive posture, and we need to develop regulations that address these issues. Who's putting what in the water, and what damage is it having on our health, on the health of our environment, our animals? And I think those are good questions. I take this very seriously, as I think everyone that's concerned about it, that lives here. So let's get aggressive about it. The Hardison Amendment is in the way. It needs to go away. There's no reason to have it. There's no reason to question whether this is an opportunity or an obstacle when we are concerned about the public health and safety. So it's antiquated. It needs to disappear.
Companies have to disclose what they discharge. There's a national discharge permit application process that they need to go through. So DEQ knows what every company discharges into the water. The problem is, frankly, that the system, DEQ, none of that is automated. If you go to DEQ to look at someone's discharge permit, you're going to be handed probably 2 or 3 feet height of binders. Another part of the law that we passed last session is so that there will be an automated database that you can access to determine what is in the water. So discharge permits require that every company list what they are discharging.
We also know there are bad players out there that don't follow the regulations.
Well, and then that's DEQ's job is to enforce those regulations. That's
and we see the
job.
Power that the private sector, the industrial sector, has in North Carolina. When the Clean Water Safety Act was introduced in May of the last
year. You're talking about the legislation sponsored by your predecessor,
right.
Senator Michael
right.
Lee.
And the North Carolina Manufacturers Alliance put their pen to it and asked for certain deletions, and they got them. And they wanted a narrow focus on just a certain class of contaminants, PFAS. But they didn't want to touch pharmaceuticals and other emerging, potentially damaging chemicals. So I think it needs to be wide open. I know people laugh at the West Coast and California, but they have what they call an environmental chemical lab. And it's a registry for everything that is discharged into the public waters and air. And they test everything, and they know. And that's a good goal to have, I think, for North Carolina.
That's one prong of,
right.
of the solution.
And a part of that is biomonitoring, medical monitoring. How is it impacting you and me?
I think that's the piece, that there's not enough research.
Really. And that's one concern about this consent order. It only identifies or focuses on 5 when we know there are hundreds and thousands of chemicals.
I want to get to Kate's comment from Wilmington. She called in and said, given other states are making strides in using unbiased third-party resources to draw more fair districts, why aren't we looking into this more? Will the new legislature take the initiative to look into this, or will they fall back on the old tired line of it will always be biased, so why try to change anything? It's interesting, the pushback that we're getting on this.
Yes, and I certainly think it should be looked at. We should look at other options and what is being done in other states. Why reinvent the wheel?
And quickly, one answer, will you oppose or support offshore drilling and seismic testing? Harper Peterson.
Oppose.
Holly Grange.
I don't think it's necessary.
That's this edition of Coastline. Representative Holly Grange, Senator Harper Peterson, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Holly.
Thanks also to Representatives Davis and Butler. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.